and it's basically like continuation of what Ole started doing on Monday afternoon. I'm showing just example of how the NMTO method, application of NMTO to various compound walls like that, and I will just pick up a few example, and I will just try to convince you that it works very nicely. So the first example I'm going to talk about is the application to a double peroxide compound. That's a strontium iron molybdenum oxide, and just a brief introduction. I mean, as you all know, the discovery of CMR in doped manganese has attracted a lot of attention due to the technological importance and the strong influence of the low magnetic field on
stick.
The strong influence of the low magnetic field on the resistance is just believed to be caused by the high degree of spin polarization of the charge carriers. All that is okay. However, the transition temperatures usually obtained for this doped manganese are low for room temperature application. So there has been quite enthusiasm about the recent experimentally reported CMR effect with this double peroxide, and showing a high magnetic transition temperature of about 410 degree to 450 degree Kelvin, bringing us to the possibility of having room temperature CMRs. So the structure is pretty simple. It's just a body center tetragonal structure, and it's very simple structure. So the oxygens, so there are some iron and molybdenum, as you can see, with red and blue, and some oxygens. The strontium are not shown in the picture, and this oxygen surrounding the molybdenum and iron atom just provides the octahedral environment, and these octahedra actually alternate along the XYZ axis, while just strontium atom just occupy the hollows that are formed by the corners of this iron oxide and molybdenum oxide octahedra. So that's very simple structure. So the LDA total energy minimization gives the ground state to be ferrimagnetic, in the sense that the magnetic moment on the iron sublattice, they are all aligned parallelly, while that in the molybdenum sublattice, they are also aligned parallelly, but the magnetic moment at iron and molybdenum side, they are antiferromagnetically aligned. So this shows actually the LDA band structure in up and down spin channel, and we see the same band structure in all the panels, but associated with each band are different kind of fatness, and these fatness are just proportional to the corresponding orbital character. So basically, the main message from this transparency is what we see is a kind of half metallic character, so that it forms a gap of about 0.8 electron volt in the upspin channel. While it crosses, it becomes metallic in the downspin channel. And another important thing to notice is that there is a large hybridization between iron D, which is actually iron T2G, and molybdenum T2G in the downspin channel. So the large magnetic transition temperature in this compound actually points to large intra-atomic exchange coupling strength between iron and molybdenum. But this is sort of counterintuitive, considering that molybdenum is usually non-magnetic, with a small intra-atomic exchange strength, something of the order of 0.1 to 0.2 electron volt within its 3D manifold. But here, if we really look at the fat bands, or the so-called orbital projected bands in the up and down channel, the orbital projected only at molybdenum T2G states, we really see that the molybdenum D dominated states in the up spin channel forms a kind of a, they are away from this Fermi energy by about an energy of 0.8 about 1 electron volt, while it really crosses the, in the downstream channel, it crosses the Fermi energy and with a broad sort of broad bandwidth. That already indicates a sort of a renormalization of this I in the, at the molybdenum site. And what we did, we employed this Enantiomer downfolding formalism to understand this unusual electronic structure as well. So what we did is actually, in our basis, we get only molybdenum T2g orbitals and integrated out all other degrees of freedom. So the bands you get are basically like this. So it's just very simple, it's just 3 by 3. You get just 3 bands, which are just molybdenum T2Gs. And just for curiosity,
we didn't start recording on it. Is that okay?
You still know it once more.
Is that okay?
Yeah. I had already few transcripts.
It's okay. No, you can
explain.
It's fine.
I see it. Yeah, but then I can put.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. So I mean, if we are just for curiosity's sake, I mean, just would like to compare with the how it works with the full LDA calculation, as you have already noticed for this example that Ole showed for the high TC compound, it actually does it pretty well. So here we look at the orbitals that we get that are described, that are describing these bands really. And for the up and down spin channel, and this is actually a plot in its Z plane. So actually, the circles are the molybdenum sites. Then you have the iron sites shown with this plus signs. And then you have, the oxygen sites shown with the plus signs. And then you have iron sites shown with the cross. And as you see, we have practically nothing in the iron site when we go to this orbital that's in the up spin channel. While we do see a lot of iron character in the tails of this effective molybdenum T2G orbital in the downspin channel. So the method actually does this renormalization that is coming from the downfolding of the iron T2G states pretty well. And if you just go and take the real space representation of this Hamiltonian and you just read off the kind of on-site energy, it's something about 0.8 electron volt. So if molybdenum D electrons have been fully polarized, then that would have been really the estimate for I effective. And if you use the LM2O estimate for the magnetization, it is somewhat far more enhanced. So to understand this simple picture, we can sort of put forward a kind of a level diagram. So the thing is, so suppose we assume that there is no hybridization between iron and molybdenum states at the beginning. It's just the atomic states. So at the iron 3 plus site, you have the exchange splitting much more than a crystal field splitting. So you have actually the exchange splitting much larger than your crystal field splitting. While it is opposite at molybdenum 5 plus site, and there your crystal field splitting is much more than your exchange splitting. So that actually puts your level like this. And if you now turn on the hybridization.
So how do you know these things?
I mean, sorry?
That also comes from the electronic structure calculation.
Yeah. You can just, that's the picture you get. So if you now turn on the hybridization, it is just schematic way of just, I mean, trying to convince you. So if you now turn on the hybridization between iron and molybdenum sites, the states of same symmetry will hybridize. And due to this hybridization between iron and molybdenum site, it's going to push this T2G up states further up and T2G down states further down, giving rise to an increased I effective. So really this opposite movement of molybdenum T2G up and molybdenum T2G down makes the effective exchange splitting at the molybdenum site large, and this comes due to the large renormalized I effective. This is driven by the large I at the iron site and the hybridization between this iron and molybdenum, and this actually happens for the specific positioning of this atomic level that happens for this compound.
So this is an induced magnetism.
This is a kind of induced magnetism that comes via your hopping. And this intron actually drives this interatomic exchange interaction J large, which we also get by a supportive Hartree-Fock kind of calculation. So this is all about, I have to say, for this first application. So let us now just move on to next application, which is this vanadate compounds. And this, just as a brief introduction, there is a growing interest in low-dimensional quantum spin systems, as we all know, due to the novel properties exhibited by them. And the example includes various systems, including like Haldane chains, Heisenberg chains, alternating chains like that. And an important family of these low-dimensional compounds are the layered vanadates with this formula AV2O5, where A is can be sodium, can be cesium, can be calcium, can be magnesium. And among these, this quarter-filled ladder compound sodium vanadium oxide is highly discussed. It undergoes actually a charge ordering transition with a simultaneous opening of spin gap that has been quite discussed in the literature in recent time. A much less studied but not less interesting system from the same vanadium oxide family is when we just go to lithium. For the crystal structure, it's a layered structure of vanadium oxide square pyramids with, so you have these layers, and then you, between different layers, you have the lithium ions sitting in between. And it has an orthorhombic structure, and the important thing is you have two crystallographically inequivalent vanadiums that I denote with V1 and V2, and this actually forms a kind of zigzag chain running along the y-axis, which is not shown in the figure. And within this layer, this V1O pyramids, they are linked with that of the V2O5 by this corner sharing bridging oxygen. So this is all about the structure. And here are the bands. So the bands close to the Fermi level are vanadium XY bands, and this four low-lying bands, because actually there are four vanadium atoms in the unit cell, they are made up of the proportion of V1 XY and V2 XY in the ratio of 2.3:1, about 70% of V1 and 30% of V2. And the oxygen P's, they lie low with the gap forming like 2.2 electron volt. This is just a gap formed by the oxygen.
Between different states.
Yeah, between different states.
But is it known experimental?
This is a distorted structure. Is it in the antiferromagnetic insulating phase?
Sorry?
The band structure you showed is for the antiferromagnetic insulating phase?
No, you can't get we did this thing with the paramagnetic calculation. It's not with the antiferromagnetic insulator.
So you have not put the lattice distortions?
There is a little bit distortion between the pyramids. It's not, the basal plane is not exactly along parallel to x-axis, so there is a bit of distortion. But it's not in the antiferromagnetic insulator phase, it's a paramagnetic phase.
Ashwin, are you using the experimentally determined
lattice constant, yeah.
And position of the vanadium atom?
Yes, right, right.
But you're not putting antiferromagnetism, you do LDA?
I do LDA paramagnetic thing.
Right. And have you done LSPA?
No, but what we were trying to assume that we will get this hopping integrals, and this hopping integrals in paramagnetic phase, we can couple it to T square by U with the J.
But why you say it's not impossible to calculate it?
No, it's not impossible. I said that's what we did.
But if you feed in a U, like an NGA plus U, I mean, you of course get that. But there's no reason to do that.
I mean,
if you would just want to change, you could see squared over U, if you're not going to calculate U anyhow.
Yeah, but you can do LSTA and see what.
Yeah, but I mean.
Yes.
Yeah, but the one possibility can be you just compare my result with you, do a antiferromagnetic LDA plus U calculation and you get your J's.
Maybe his question is if you do LSDA, do you get antiferromagnetic?
Yeah. if you put a U, you will get.
No,
I mean,
no.
Oh, just antiferromagnetic.
No,
I don't know. I mean, whether it's enough just to make it antiferromagnetic and get an insulator, or you really need a U to put.
This band was having unique broad, yeah?
Yeah.
I suspect you do.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I've not done that calculation, so I don't know.
You may be worthwhile to do, because they all work by Matthews. I mean, I think not to be checked.
You suggest from this that you can open a gap if you double the init cell and you do this.
That, I understand his point.
This is lithium 4.5 plus, right?
How many?
So the point is, here is a point. I mean, there are two different, 4.5.
Yeah, you will never get it.
It's
Chesh Odin, 4.5 electron per millennium.
What do you
Yeah, there are two vanadium. It's a mixed valent compound. Yeah, that was actually the whole point about this analysis.
If there is no charge shouldering, you will not get the interferomagnetic isolator.
I understand. But the distortions, they don't get any transfer of charge or something like that. It gives you the even number. I mean,
but it's already distorted.
It has this distortion. I don't know.
It gives a distortion. It splits completely.
We do it tomorrow.
Yeah, but that was actually the whole point about this mixed valency and things. So the.
What's the field factor of these pens?
Sorry?
Are these pens exactly half field?
There are four atoms, right? Four vanadium atoms.
A quarter field.
It's a quarter field thing, yeah. And there is one electron.
Vanadium 4.5 plus, that's a half an electron per vanadium, which is quarter filled.
I don't see why the terminal is.
It's a four bands here?
Yeah, they have four bands, yeah.
And probably there is three electrons. No.
Okay. Vanadium 1 is, if you consider vanadium 1 to be in D4 plus state, then there is only one electron in vanadium D. Yeah, but there are two vanadium 1. So there will be two electrons.
Then it's half full.
Then it will be half filled, right. Yeah.
So is that just bands of one vanadium?
Sorry?
Your four bands.
Yes.
How many electrons?
I think
so. Vanadium.
Maybe it all to the oxygen.
Probably 1.5 is normal. 1.5 electrons per vanadium. Yeah.
Yeah, because that's what we will see. It's not completely.
1.5 electrons per vanadium. Okay. Probably 3 electrons. Yeah. Good.
What's the formula?
It's Li V2O5. So 5 if you take 2 minus.
10.19.
4.5.
So it's
vanadium
4.5
yeah.
plus.
Yeah. 1.5.
Yeah.
Plus.
So it is
4.5
plus.
What's that? But it doesn't seem to. I don't know. It's half electron per vanadium.
That's D1 half.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's the main thing. You can have D1 in V1 and nothing d0 in v5, or you can have a kind of partial thing, which we really see here. I mean, there is a, I mean, I've not really shown the proportion, but it's 70% on v1 and 30% on v2. Yeah, so pretty much on what we were talking about, that the temperature dependence of the measured susceptibility suggests a low temperature nature of the spin system, and the experimental susceptibility is comparable to any of this magnetic model, and that is actually based on whether I have a complete kind of charge disproportionation, in the sense that my V1 is in D1 state and I have no electron in the V2 side. In that case, the low energy physics and the magnetic model will be all dominated by V1. And then depending on whether this hopping, this zigzag thing, so we have a kind of a double chain thing at V1 and V2 sides. So depending on whether my J1 is greater than JB, which is like interaction along this chain or along this zigzag chain, so depending on that, you can get either a picture of a double Heisenberg zigzag chain or Heisenberg double chain. But there can be a third possibility, which is actually based on the fact that you have a kind of partial charge distribution, so that your occupancy is not exactly like 1 at V1 side and 0 at V2 side. Then you can actually come up with a model of asymmetric ladder with one electron per V1 oxygen V2 rung, which would then be like an analogy with this sodium compound. Yeah, so we can actually have a model where we put one orbital every vanadium size. In our case, we took it as vanadium dxy and integrated out all the other degrees of freedom to derive an effective vanadium dxy only model. And the parameters look somewhat like that. First of all, there is a substantial on-site, somehow I lose this, substantial on-site splitting for V1 and V2d orbitals. I don't remember the numbers now, but it was substantial. And the round hopping, this one, is quite close to that obtained for sodium compound, but that's not very surprising. Only the bending angle is different between these two compounds, and that doesn't influence very much the dp pi hoppings. And this diagonal hopping, Td, is significant, and it's needed very much to describe the different dispersion behavior of the bonding and anti-bonding vanadium bands. And the second nearest neighbor, interladder hopping, like this kind of thing, that is also very significant and needed to describe the various aspects of the band structure dispersion. And the nearest neighbor hopping, this one is very different for the V1 chain and V2 chain. So in brief, the microscopic parameters associated with V1 and V2, they differ substantially.
What was the other question?
Yeah.
So you found 0.35 eV between V1 and V2.
Yeah, this is
and
this.
The lower one is 0.2 eV?
No, this is TB.
Oh, okay.
This goes like that. So in absence of any contribution from V2, that is the P2 in my previous slide, the magnetic model could be considered as that of the zigzag chain, since this T1 is much larger than TB, as we have already seen. But the contribution of about 30% of this V2 has non-negligible consequences for the underlying microscopic model. The effective hopping matrix element that we get along the direction of this chain, which we call as TB, now becomes like a TB effective when I have the contribution from that at the V1 side and that at the V2 side. So all we can say that this can lead to a kind of description of asymmetric ladder model, and the degree of charge ordering then has a substantial influence on the nature of the magnetic state, and this is supported by the recent numerical study of optical conductivity, and also in accordance with the inelastic neutron scattering. Sorry?
Okay. No, sir. How many atoms you have in units of vanadium? Probably four.
Yeah.
Okay. Then it means that it's not three electrons but six. So.
Sorry?
Fine. It's counting.
Six?
Six?
How can.
Electron of four, one, six.
Ah, okay. Two. You account for the spin degeneracy. Yes. Yeah.
I mean. It's four vanadium atom and units.
Six
electrons. Six per one vanadium, 1.5 electron. Four vanadium, six electron is this four band. It's perfectly fine. There are four vanadium atom in unit cell.
But I don't
vanadium
understand. I mean, no, if you have only one electron each vanadium.
1.5.
One electron. It's 0.5. One electron. So you are sharing.
1.5. Okay, let's.
I don't understand. I mean.
Your feeling is.
Your
feeling of the four bands worrying.
It looks as if Fenushi had one and a half. I don't know how.
No, but I know that we have one.
How can you get one and a half? One vanadium is in D4 plus state, another vanadium is in D5 plus state. So that means you have one.
Okay. It's just four vanadium atom in unit cell, yeah?
Yeah.
I just want to ask.
Thank you. 05, 2 times 5 is 10. Sodium gives away 1. Then you have 9.
And then it's 4.5.
Yeah, 4.5.
That's what I'm saying.
So it's D1 half.
D1 half. Yeah. If you multiply by 4, you get 6
electrons. No. D0.5.
1 half.
No.
Good.
Yeah, and sorry.
No, I know how many electrons is sodium only 2 or 5, so it's 1.
Let's talk. It looks also like what she had, so you may be right now. Let's go.
Anyway, I think this is some trivial thing that we can fix, yeah. This counting. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, this is something we started just this weekend about thinking about P2O3 and.
So with this T and U and all that, we can compute some kind of J and all that?
Yeah.
Then agree with the magnetic.
Does that agree with the magnetic thing? We have not computed with the magnetic calculation, but you can fit your susceptibility data and can get a kind of feel for J.
That fits together.
That fits, but that also depends on what kind of magnetic model you have in your mind to fit the susceptibility data. There was this problem. So that's why you really need to do all this thing. Yeah, so I mean, so we just tried with this compound of, we just started with this compound of V2O3 and the structure probably, I think in the audience you all know. So it has this stacking of this vanadium oxygen octahedrals, and they are stacked in certain ways. And it has this corindum structure. And this is the same structure but shown also where the oxygens are actually specified and also the axes are sort of drawn. Actually, I picked up this structure because I didn't get my software to run to plot the structure, and since probably we'll need this figure for later thing. And this is sort of the coordination of the vanadium. So along the z-axis you have one, and along in the xy plane you have these three other vanadiums. So this is sort of, again, this. This orbital projected bands for this vanadium oxide.
Sort of
So, I mean.
No, Thomas report.
Doesn't matter, I mean.
It doesn't.
So it's just, I mean, you have this this cubic symmetry, so you have a cubic splitting between EG and T2G, but then you also have a kind of weak trigonal distortion, and that splits it further into the small AG and A1G. And what you see is the fatness is just proportional to these characters. So the high lying is the vanadium S. These low lying bands are dominated by oxygen, as we see also in the case of the other vanadate example. And here you have the splitting between EG. And these are the T2G bands, so actually summed up them, they will be like T2G bands. And then due to the splitting, this trigonal splitting, you also had the difference between EG and A1G. And these are actually the corresponding L points, corresponding K points. So if you see, as one goes from Z to L and Z to gamma, actually one is changing the K point along the Z direction. And we see, if we concentrate on this T2G bands, we see a kind of quite a big dispersion there. And this is mainly coming like from A1G. But if we go really along the XY direction, as we go from G to F, as you see that the dispersion is much less.
So, should this suggest that the distortion that splits the T2G states really isn't very important?
That is really? Isn't very
important. It looks like there's not much distinction between those
EGs.
No, they are not degenerate.
It's still high temperature structure. I mean,
this is a high temperature structure.
It's only the problem
with distances. Right, but it doesn't. It's the small AG and the A1G.
No, they split.
I mean, if you look at the really their on site energies, they are different. By about 0.2 electron volt, I remember.
Which is much smaller than the bandwidth.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. This already has distortion?
Yeah.
But it is surprising.
Sorry. Yeah.
Well, the first thing is that the trivial thing about this is, yes, that the T2Gs are non-bonding things. It's not like in the copper oxide. So the other thing where we are looking at it heavily in the D and the oxygens, they split apart like that. And the guys who do that are the EGs and the oxygens. And left in the middle, are sitting these so-called non-bonding ones, which are the C2G, so they have relatively much less oxygen character than in the
EG. They do have some, but not much. Yeah.
But now the thing that surprises me in the bands is, of course, this that they need C2Gs, although the EG and the A1G sort of think of the same energy. There are some bands, quite a lot actually, which are purely A1G and some which are.
I even made a blow up of this picture just to really compare, because we are just trying, so this is actually what you get. So if you really, I mean, if you concentrate on this band, this has a sort of pure A1G character. And that's also there if you go from this direction to this direction. But for the lowest band, there is a mixture.
Energy scale is different.
Oh my God! I was sorry. No, I was just making this. Sorry.
It's all right.
sorry. I was just making it at the last moment. Sorry.
If it's not distorted, why are there four atoms? There are four atoms.
No, but they are equivalent, but they are, I mean, one pair, there is a rotation along the two different thing, and then you have a next pair which are also rotated among themselves in a different way, but similar to that you get in the upper pair.
But there are two atoms or four atoms?
There are four atoms in the unit.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry, I mean, yeah. Yeah, and then we did, I mean, just we tried to downfold everything other than T2G, and as you see, I mean, it looks, it works pretty well. And
can we see how many bands cross the Fermi level?
12.
They all cross?
I mean, not.
I only see two that cross.
Yes.
One, two, three, four.
Four.
What?
Four. Just look at the Z. I mean, cross the Z.
Yes. One.
I see two, three. Yeah, maybe four.
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 Four bands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so this is the story of just keeping just the manifold of T2G states as probably all wrong, right?
So you were saying, I mean, I could have just downfolded.
Further.
Yeah.
Can we see this other picture before?
Yeah, but
what are these four states?
Why don't we downfold?
I understand. I mean, I mean,
we need a smaller U to get the transition, which is what Marcelo was saying, right?
Yeah, but I don't know. I mean, if you.
So there is no A1G at the Fermi level.
I mean, this one definitely it cross and has A1G character.
But its density of states is very small on this
part. Yeah, it should be because density of states from A1G is very small. Yeah.
Because that has the bonding and the bonding gap because of the pair of anions.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Which is Calvin's
idea.
Yeah.
Bonding is really the main thing.
So the EG pair is lowest energy, like 2/10 of EV or something.
EG is well lower in energy.
So this pair really is actually this steep band, what you're saying, that's the other thing.
Right.
Yeah. But I mean, I think. Yeah, but I mean, this is sort of the hoppings we got.
But so how do you blow a gap in that steep band that you do by the signal thing? No.
Yeah.
Must blow a gap in that, sure.
Sorry?
So this steep one, this one A1G
band. Okay, what Guy said and Marcello is that there is some narrow bands, which is EG, maybe first, make them. No, he couldn't downfold.
Why not?
Because he crossed the Fermi level.
Sure, you've downfolded.
You only showed us how you can downfold when you have silicon. You have two atoms which are completely degenerate.
Another job, fortunately.
No, but still, you need to open the gap in this A1G as well. And probably first you open to get an EG and it's harvesting, but they're narrow, and then there is some induced gap in A1G. Or even an iron pair.
How many do we have? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
No, this is not constant. This is really clear.
So we have 6 EG bands? I don't think I see how many.
8.
You have 4 EG bands and then 8.
Four.
Oh,
no,
four
but near
A1G
the Fermi level. We should check if it really means there's such a large U to do V2O3, because my recollection from the earlier, from when Marcelo's thesis, to do the optical data, one needed a smaller U. Mm-hmm. I mean, the optical gap in V2O3 is quite small. It was like half an EV.
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps a more reasonable model is
bandwidth.
Downfold the bands, and as already explained, when you downfold the bands, the U gets reduced.
probably never 2.5 eV, right? That's too small.
The gap is 0.5 eV, so the U, you need about a U of 1 or 1.5, or we took 2, and then a bandwidth of 1, and there you have it.
That's probably too small, right? Can you get that small with that volume?
That's interesting. I like this. You probably want to
No, I mean, I think what you meant probably with downfolding, I mean, the orbitals becomes more delocalized, and then you, if you compute the U, it's smaller. This is an end. This. This is one. Yeah.
I mean, those excitonic effects in the view, is large.
Yeah, I mean, but maybe, I mean, I just like to mention, I mean, we just got the kind of real space representation for this T2G, so for this 12 by 12 kind of thing. And the trigonal splitting was something, 0.26 of the other 0.3 electron volt. And what we find that the effective hopping, the main one was along the, if you have in mind this picture of vanadium coordination. Yeah, with this thing. So in this picture, you can just compare this with that. And the main thing we got is really along the z direction between 2A1G, and that's about 0.5 electron volt. And that along this x direction is about 0.23 electron volt. So
this number differs from the number that was used.
In your paper. We haven't really checked that.
Shasha. No, you really look at this and it was very surprising for you 25 years ago did this, but probably it took a long time. Now,
so what are the differences, if there is some qualitative difference in this
paper? Okay, so we will definitely check. Good.
Can I ask?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Would you be able to say anything about the hoppings that go to, say, these three,
We get everything. We are just, I mean, because Shasha just, I mean, Shasha started working this weekend, and then he just, I mean.
Oh, yeah, you said it is not correct to take just the nearest neighbor.
I mean, because the point is you have to Fourier transform back to get your tight binding bands to see how good you are really to make this cutoff. And definitely this is not enough. There are many, many other hoppings.
The ones I picked out are the ones that are coupled to a single one.
Yes, yeah, exactly. It's not enough. Yeah, I mean, it's just the beginning. So, I mean, and we just sort of thought that maybe we can just put.
Did you say, or did you look at this range of working?
No, I haven't.
Probably 2, 3.
Yeah.
This is second, maybe yet another shell.
Yeah.
Make one other comment, and maybe may or may not be interesting, but I think you might be able to compare this AE splitting number that you got to an actual experimental number from the optical spectrum of vanadium 3+ in AL203. I think that if I remember, the optical spectrum may have in it some features that allow you to make deduce something about that number in the impurity limit. I have to look back at the literature, but I just have the feeling that's a number that you might know spectrum. You might be able to really know.
Right.
I can try to look, maybe not here, but when I get home.
And I mean, then we even start. Attempted. I mean, it's just to plot the orbital, how it looks. I mean, it's just one picture. So it's a picture of this A1G in the YZ plane, and we really see quite a significant amount of oxygen character. So probably the hopping, I mean, so you will have another vanadium sitting here along the Z direction, so probably the hopping goes like that. So, I mean, but this is the orbital. Yeah.
This is of course taking as 12 orbitals.
Yeah, but this is all taking as. So the point is, if you really downfold the other orbitals, but the, I mean, the, then you have to really need to know whether downfold A1g keep EGs or you, I mean, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, there can be two possibilities, and
probably the one that has the pseudo gap near the Fermi level is the one that we have to get rid of.
You have to get rid of. That means that's A1g you want to get rid of.
I always get confused with the names. This one that has
This one you want to get rid of then.
This is Castellani orbital.
Maybe you want to see the picture.
Yeah. But I think that's all I have to really say about. Okay.
When you say that there is also hopping between not just his neighbor but also second and they are really comfortable, they not factor one quarter or something like that.
True. It will be much reduced.
In a sense, to take out this second order orbital, correct, physically or not.
That never got clear.
Yeah, but then the number of this,
so it's not exponentially growing, it's not like zero.
I mean, it is much smaller than this first nearest neighbor scale. It has something
to do. Things are not much more than the orbital.
Sometimes you have to worry about the second neighbor happening because you will have a very strong first neighbor filament heat change.
Yeah, in fact.
And that cancel out the first neighbor happening
glass. Yeah.
So then the second neighbor becomes very brief.
Yeah,
and that hasn't been taken into account in this analysis yet.
No, because that account really, I mean, when you have a strict
formula, that threshold is sort of the chemical.
Okay, so
then
here we have another application of the NMTO method, probably the first which we did. Maybe. Okay, that was an application to hold open the ITC superconductor. I will talk about band structure for correlation with TC max. Okay, this work was done at the Max Planck Institute of Stuttgart. Okay, yes, we are importantly working, and here are the people that worked on the subject. There is this stuff. Okay, I call the motivation of this work, what we wanted to understand, what was the physical problem, and what we tried to use the NMTO method for. So, okay. The ITC we all know, one of the common characteristics is the presence of copper oxygen planes, and which are divided in the simplest material by charge reservoir planes. And we know that superconductivity appears when holes are doped into this plane. And TC increases with the doping, reaches a maximum, then goes down again. We don't know what is the mechanism yet, and we don't know also what is controlling the maximum value of TC. I mean, what makes TC so different in different materials. In particular, if we start from single layer materials, okay, we have systems such like a lanthanum copper oxide doped, which reaches a maximum TC of 40 Kelvin, and other systems which go up to 90 Kelvin. So what is the what is behind this? There is some parameter, there is something in which characterize these materials and which correlates with the maximum value of TC. On top, okay, these were all single-layer materials. On top, we know that if we have double of three-layer materials, TC also goes up and increases till we have three layers, then goes down again. So what is that rules, this, what is the parameter that controls this maximum TC? Okay, we thought that if there is something which is dependent on the structure, that probably is already contained in the one electron part of the Hamiltonian. Although we know that the physics of these systems is the physics of Mott insulator, and the correlation effects are probably important. But okay, we thought we can use okay this new developed technique to extract material dependent information from the LDA calculation, and then build a model which can be used, for example, by dynamical mean field theory to understand pen superconductivity in these materials. Okay, just to. I have too many structures here, but okay. Just want, okay, everybody knows it, but just to remember what I will talk about. Okay, this is the one of the systems. Okay, here we have the copper oxygen plane. And what is a common characteristic is that above this copper here, we have an apical oxygen, and then there is something else which depends on the material. So I will talk about this apical oxygen, this copper oxygen plane. Okay, so the first thing we did, of course, is the full deltonic structure calculation. So, of course, we have a lot of bands. And, okay, what do we want? We have this one band that crosses the Fermi level, which is this black band here. And which, if you do the fat bands analysis, you can find out it's the copper Dx square band with oxygen P in. Here I've blown up some little character, which is the copper S character, which is also present, and this maximum at this X point here, the saddle point goes down to zero at the gamma point and is absent along the gamma M direction. But of course, we don't want all these bands. What we want is something else. What we want is to describe the band, I mean, a few millielectron volt around the Fermi level of the saddle point. So what we did now is to use this downfolding technique to go from LDA bands to a one-band model. So here is the full line, is the LDA bands, and here we have this one-band model, which was obtained by the downfolding technique. And once we have this model, of course, we can plot the orbitals, and we can calculate the hopping by Fourier transforming now this Hamiltonian. Okay, just a moment to show what we obtained. So we started with single layer materials, which are the simplest to be understood. Okay, this is lanthanum, this is thallium, barium, copper oxide, this is VCT, and this is tetragonal. So here we always have this band. And okay, we have this downfolding technique. So here we have the downfolded band, and we calculate the hopping. So these are the in-plane hopping as a function of the distance in atomic unit. So here, okay, we have the first hopping, which is about the same in the materials, and then okay, they decrease with increasing the distance. And what we find is, okay, we immediately see that the T prime, the next near neighbor hopping, is smaller in lanthanum than in thallium and in mercury.
What about the sign? Is the sign which is usually taken by people?
Yeah, it's the common. I mean, what do you mean? The sign is correct. You call it negative, and this is positive. Okay. Okay. Okay, so okay, just I show you just briefly for a moment the orbital. For let's fix on this one system. So this is the orbital in the copper oxygen plane, which corresponds to that band. Okay, I think this was the zero MTO. So this we see the copper oxygen, the copper Dx square minus R square in the center. So here we have the P's. And yeah, okay, this small differential is the copper X, which sits on the next neighbor. And there, okay, we have other stuff. I will come back later to this one. Okay, this was the first thing you do. So you do you go to from the LDA band to the one band model, and then you calculate the parameter and the openings. Now you want to understand what's going on. So, okay, you can find that T prime is smaller in lanthanum than in other system. You want to understand what happens. So we go up from, let's say, from one band model to a few band model, which in our case was a four band model. And we try to relate this hopping to some chemical parameters. So what is the four band model? Four band model is a model in which there is the copper dx square minus y square, the oxygen px and y, and the copper s. And then we can see that, okay, the next near neighbor hopping goes through the oxygen p's, while the other hoppings in the plane goes through the copper s character. So this is the t prime and this is the t double prime. And okay, if we really do this four band model, what do we have? Okay, here is, we can again calculate these bands at the Fermi level. So here the relation between the one band and the four band model. So here in the one band model, we have the T, T prime, T double prime, and all the stuff. In the four band model, we have parameters. We have the TPD hopping between P and D. We have the TSP hopping and the energies of the P, the D, and the copper S. And this the formula which corresponds to that. So what we have is that we found that for the single layer materials, this four band model can be used, and all the parameters are almost materially independent apart from the energy of this copper S. Of this copper s orbital, and this is a sort of effective orbital, which in reality is something more complex than a copper s. Let's say it's an actual orbital, which is an hybrid between the copper s, the apical oxygen pz, eventually the 3z square minus one of the copper. So it's something which contains all the rest of the bands, let's say, that were unfolded, but mainly these characters. And this one is the parameter which is energy dependent.
These happenings are for the four band model.
Sorry?
These happenings here, T prime, T double prime, are for the four band model or for the one band model?
Okay, this T prime is for one band model, and this TPD is for the four band model. So I'm making the connection between a four band model, which has oxygen P, copper D, and copper S, and a one band model, which has only T prime, T double prime. So this one.
Black is four band, red is one band.
Yeah, okay. So this was, okay. This is the one band model, so you see. And this is the formula you can get from the four band model. Okay, so why is it this energy then of the copper s dependent? Why does it change with the material? Well, let's start with these systems, which are the one in which the distance is quite large, okay? So we have this apical oxygen here. This is my copper. This is again the apical oxygen. And okay, if they are far, this will be the pure copper S character. But now if they approach, of course, there is some hybridization and the energy level is pushed up toward the top. Now what happens when in lanthanum? In lanthanum, the distance is very short. And okay, there is another opening which enters, which is the opening between oxygen PZ and the copper 3z square. And so the apical oxygen becomes an even more complicated object. And I have here a picture from the NMTO. Okay, that was in lanthanum, where you see this 3z square character and how it goes up in the z direction. And actually, we can compare now the mercury with the lanthanum. Where is it? The figure one? Okay, this one. So here we have the system in which the distance of the apical oxygen is close and the 3z square character is involved. So here we see the apical oxygen and so on. And here we have mercury, barium, copper oxide, where the apical oxygen is quite far and we don't see almost anything in the z direction. Okay, so, okay, now we try to see if there is some correlation between in this single layer material between this parameter, which seems to be the one which depends on the material NTC. But okay, before I call you again, that okay, let's say this one. Okay. If we have, here this is the one-band model, okay, you have TT prime. I said that the only material dependent in the four-band model is the energy of this effective orbital. And now, how is it this related to the T prime? Well, we can show that the copper-less character is proportional to V square, which is cos kx minus cos ky, times this R square. And this R square is basically T prime over T. So there is a relation between T prime and the copper-less character. So let's say when we are very far, when the apical oxygen is far, like in this mercury barium copper oxide, the copper-less is almost a pure copper-less. There is a large copper-less character, and this T prime over T is large. Where in system where, like lanthanum, we have in the opposite situation, the copper-less, the energy level is pushed toward the high energy, and then we have less copper-less character, and T prime is smaller. Okay, so where was the previous one? Now I lost it. okay, sorry. Yeah, I had it here. Yeah, I put it there, then somehow got lost. The one with R as a function of. Of the of with TC, one of the yes. Sorry. The results. I put it there. 2 7. Was it? I know that I always. Okay. Here it is. So, okay. Here we are. So, okay then. Okay, we see this is the parameter, which is a range parameter, and which in a chemical Hamiltonian is correlated with the position of this S level. And what we see here is that, okay, the range parameter is about 0.2 for lanthanum, and increases for bismuth compound, and thallium and mercury. And here we put the TC, and it seems that in these single layer materials, there is a scaling of this R with TC. And okay, here these lines, we try to displace the apical oxygen a little bit and see how, what happens. And okay, of course, for example, for lanthanum, okay, you see you see that this line changes, the slope is quite high. And this could explain why, for example, in strained materials, in Bay-Bay saw that increasing straining, you can increase the C in lanthanum barium copper oxide.
But is there a physical reason why?
Well, that should be explained by the many people. I mean, this is okay.
This is all chemistry.
What we found. We found a correlation.
Let's say the apical oxygen just disturbing.
That's
right.
In that case, this reflective deprime.
Yeah, the point is simply that if you that you sort of move. The orbital from out, if you remove apical oxygen or you bind it to something else, then the orbital collapses and condenses onto the plane. So what happens here is there's this correlation between the orbital being two-dimensional in a way and not coupling to the
plane. Yeah, to make it more two-dimensional.
No, but it's not trivial.
It's not trivial.
No. The plane becomes larger if it's, if apical oxygen.
Because the T prime and the not nearest neighbor, but the second, third, and so on neighbor hoppings to all proceed via the so-called cover S or actual orbital. And the question is, what is the energy that you have to hop up to and come back again? And this energy comes further and further down the more you take apical oxygen and stuff away because it's anti-bonding, so it goes down.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, the last thing is, this R parameter, this range parameter also affect the constant energy quantum. So for example, it's related to this delta K, so this, slope of this, of the energy quantum. So here in lanthanum is small, while in mercury it bends toward the gamma point. Okay,
Have you done that for electron dot compounds?
Like yeah, the electron dot, we have one at the moment. We can't do it. Okay, okay, so that now we are still with the one layer old open system. So just the result of this part is, okay, we have one parameter, which is important, is this energy of this effective orbital, which changes from material to material. This one controls this range parameter, the t prime over t on the one band model, which you may want to construct for the Hubbard model. And it controls also, okay, we'll come to this later, the perpendicular Hawking. Okay, now we were not completely happy with that, so we wanted to do, okay, the other one. We want, okay, we wanted to do more materials, so we also took the multi-layer materials and so all added lately left on dope. So okay, here we put all the I mean the system which we could study. So what does it mean? Okay, here we have again, let's start with this, we have again R, which is T prime over T, our range parameter. Here we have TC max on the y-axis. And okay, we put, of course, we have our single layer materials, but also the two layers and three layers. So here we have, we see a correlation, especially with this dark square. Which represent, in the case of two or three layers, the most bonding bands. So what's going on? It's again bonding. Bond, most bonding subband.
So you have a splitting the double.
I'll show you the figure. So it's the one in yeah.
And in the huge splitting, you can see
Sorry.
You can see
this is the anti-bonding band, and this is the bonding band.
They have different shapes, so they have different C prime or C.
Yeah.
And as you go up in triple layer, you can see triple layer tellurium and mercury up there. That's huge living.
So we think the correlation is mostly with the most bonding band. So what's going on? Well, we look again the orbitals of this bonding band. Now we have okay, Mercury single layer, double layer, three layers. And we see that there is, there is a bond here between, what happens is that this bonding band contributes again to change this S electron position. So it pushes it down again in energy. And so, the mechanism which should increase this C in the single layer materials and in the double, two or three layer material should be more or less the same. Because the mechanism, the trend is the same. Because what happens is always the same thing, that what changes the energy of this AS level. And okay, this picture is nice because what does this tell you? For example, if we take IBCO, okay, we have these two layers, and now we are here. And now we put something larger, which pushes the layer away, so we have less, so the ES level now should be higher in energy. And now we go down to where it was finished here, to this one. So TC is going down. So this two, follow the trend. If you put lanthanum instead of yttrium, so we are going from here to there. Okay, this is of course in agreement also with pressure experiment in mercury compounds. And okay, what else should I say on this? Okay, I think it's a very nice picture which tends to indicate that there is really a correlation between these range parameters, this ES orbital and the maximum TC. And now here,
when you have just a line, and then the square in the middle, what does that mean? Like, for example, for the lanthanum barium 2, copper 3, or 7.
Lanthanum barium. Okay, we have two lines. Okay, this dotted line is just connects to the two, the bonding and the antibonding.
Yeah,
the
this one is
the KZ dispersion.
KZ dispersion.
So.
This is supposed to say, this is a three dimensional picture. But for the bands, the hopping integrals in the plane, the TT prime, T double prime, of course, it's taking for a certain kz, if you like.
Yeah.
Ah. So if you take a different kz,
then you get another.
Then you get, so this shows you also how the kz dispersion, which Eva didn't talk about,
yeah,
that
okay,
decreases. So you have a huge kz dispersion when r is small. As r gets bigger, the
then
kz dispersion.
When you just have a dot,
so
dot correspond to what?
Smaller.
To something which is
really
two-dimensional.
But
there
is not the point,
which is more three-dimensional.
Let's take this one. This is a single-layer material. Yes,
and
it has a kz dispersion, which goes from here, if you took kz equals to zero, if you take pi over c, it's here, it's the middle, it's here.
But your point in orbital, where corresponds to? If it's double layer, I would say that
double layer, essentially, it's more to dimensional.
Principle,
sorry.
Principle, you make a relation with a point in orbital, if it's n layer.
No,
but if it's a kz.
Oh, there is also kz dispersion.
Yeah.
IMCO, here's two layer mercury. As this one for the bond, for the antibonding, the antibonding has this kz dispersion.
Right.
The bonding has that kz dispersion.
So
for triple layer mercury, the kz dispersion is this. For the single layer material, it has a huge kz dispersion. This guy has this kz dispersion. And the kz dispersion depends, of course, very much on whether the layers are stacked on top of each other, like in Mercury, then you have a huge kz dispersion, or they're shifted over, like in the lanthanum one says, very, very little kz dispersion.
Mm-hmm.
And, but these things are all...
Then you put all this in the middle of this...
yeah, I take it where they don't couple. I mean, pi over c band.
And okay, when we also have this electron loop, that seems to fit also. And okay, about the
We gave this talk, Jack Dow, who's at all these conferences and doesn't believe the superconductivity sits in the carbon oxygen plane, but in the other planes, and always makes a big point of it. He says, I gave a beer. I have this material strontium 2 neodymium. That's this orange thing down there at the bottom. Yeah, and it has a square sitting over there on the left.
Yeah.
So can I give you this one? I'll not tell you anything about it, but I'll send you the structure. And I got the structure and fit it into the computer, and now came this orange point out here. So I want my beer.
Could you get that?
So, the difference between lanthanum 1,2,3 compound and the yttrium 1,2,3.
Yeah, this
lanthanum.
This two
seems to sit more or less just below.
The two.
No,
this
no,
one.
No, you should look at the.
What do you mean?
Should look at the solid squares.
Solid square.
Mm-hmm.
This
is the most bonded band.
That's the most bonded.
So this is a database that you can always get the compound and put it there.
They give us the structure and you do the band calculation.
Can, you explain why when you put black pressure on the mercury compound it goes to 116?
Of course.
Well, because we have the story of this bonding band. I mean, when you squeeze the layer together, then this ES level is pushed down. And so, I mean, this is a way to...
What's the limit of that? I mean, in principle, you keep applying pressure. I mean, how big you can get your T prime?
Okay, this one. Okay.
Okay. So this picture, that is as a function of apical oxygen. This is basically, you could also say, the position of this copper S layer. And you would believe these are single layer material. You're saturated here. If you move apical oxygen, nothing happens to me here. So you're top, you can't get better than 9 degrees.
Yeah,
these
but
single layer material.
Yes, single
now
layer.
Came the big surprise. Then we did the multilayer. People, everybody would believe if the electrons are localized, they don't sit on a bonding or antibonding one, they just sit on a plane and not in a molecular orbital, of course, but in a plane. But if we just did it, what happens if you two layers, since the interplane coupling also goes by this copper S, then this thing basically splits in a bonding and an antibonding, and then
an
the bonding one gets up higher in this curve. So the only effect of the multilayer thing in this picture, if you believe it, is actually to split it and make copper S split out in two in a bonding and an antibonding copper S, and then that means that you lower that level, the bonding one gets lower, and it's easier to hop up to that. So the more you do, So the lower down comes. You can also.
There was also the orbital picture. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the big one. That's one mm-hmm. side. You can also go at it differently. You can see. So you can have this. So in a three-band model, if you don't believe Kawai, this thing would be PP hopping. Yes. So the fact is that this back lobe of the P, they get bonding together. Now you can better hop from here and over here, or you can hop around the corner and hop out here because this TPP gets much bigger.
But can you explain why it saturates at 165 degrees?
No, I cannot. No. Now, okay. So how could you do better? You could do better if you could squeeze them. Yes, that would be better because this bonding antibody would be better. So that would be the explanation in mercury. I don't know why it stopped. However, Warren has done a lot of studies on say, IPCO under pressure. That is not so easy for IPCO. Apical oxygen is still not that far away. You change a lot of internal degrees of freedom, so a couple more or less to actually, so these layers coming together is not the only effect that happens. All sorts of other things happen, and then it becomes very complicated. Whereas we believe that the mercury you are up there, apical oxygen is really far away, and nothing much happens to that distance as you squeeze it. But there was this other prediction on what Eva said is you believe how to make IPCO better, put in something bigger. It hasn't been possible to put in strontium instead of yttrium, but you obviously had put in lanthanum. So that had been done. Lanthanum is smaller, and that's why what Eva explained, that when you put the smaller lanthanum in, you have a Tmax going from 90 down to 50. And we did the calculation, and that one lay on the curve.
So that effect is a structure effect.
Size effect. So that is the screen. Chemical pressure. How large you said is the variation of T among the different compounds? The variation of just the hopping T, the variation among the different compounds?
T doesn't change a lot. For example.
That was called 0.4 volts. I mean, it may change.
Yeah, we have some examples here.
There is no correlation between that and DC. That is, if you said you put the variation of T and DC, there is no correlation.
For example, in this tree, it was just the same. If you look. Mm-hmm.
0.45.
Uh-huh.
Right, it just changes in hard decimal.
So T is almost constant, essentially.
Yeah.
How sensitive is T2, T prime, which is the key point here?
Sorry.
So how sensitive the T prime is to the downvoting procedure? Because it's something unique, right?
Absolutely, yeah. That's very important.
Yeah, that's very important. Okay, what?
Because these, are you saying something else?
No, it's just please. No, no, I'm just for showing the bands and.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
So, I mean, this is something,
please. Take one.
The point is that this, if you take this downfolded orbital and let's say you calculate the band variationally, then you're getting a very good band, then this band is going to follow all the way down here as you see. Mm-hmm. Now, the nature of these things is really a three-band model. And in the three-band model, if EP was equal to ED, you would have a cusp at this point because the non-bonding, because you would have a cusp. Now, so. If you represent that band too well, all the down through all this stuff here, and maybe get it all the way down to a three-band model, then if it happened that EP were equal to ED, you would have infinitely long range, and your TT prime, T double prime series would go on forever.
Yeah.
Right. Nevertheless, you can do that. It turns out it is still, you can write up what that Fourier transform is, and the expression was given by Eva. It is all governed by this one parameter R. But in order to get a fast convergence series, as in this previous picture here, so what I'm trying to say that there is, if you Fourier transform the band, there is this one parameter R, which is also in the three-band model, and that gives you what TT prime, T double prime, how they're all related. However, in order to get something which falls off as fast as this, you have to take the bands worse, so that they of course they are low energy band structure. You don't want to reproduce the upper band of the three band model. You want to do worse. You want to have a faster convergence, and there is within this thing a well-defined way of doing that. But it's a non-trivial point. You just in this case you don't take that orbital and then take the band which you calculate unidirectional and Fourier transform it, because it will get a huge range. That's why we talk, you have to think a bit of chemistry to get rid of that cusp. You don't want to reproduce that thing.
And the other one at the cusp.
You want a band which is worse, so it's not so trivial.
So that
we have a new procedure of doing very similar thing. So you're saying that if I cut my energy window to cover only the physics of 1.5 EV, I should reproduce your figure, right?
Right.
Okay, maybe we should try it.
Okay. So that's why Eva had this other picture of the Fermi surfaces and the constant energy surface. This is this question, yes, of turning the Fermi surface from the 1.0 direction to the 1.1 direction. So that's a real low energy thing with this picture here, yes. There you're just sitting at one energy table, one smooth saddle point, and you see the relation between this R parameter and the TT prime. So this range parameter we're having is simply a sign of the ratio of this piece to that piece or something like that. That's what this says here. So you can just, so actually all these points, to get it right, the simple procedure is do an LDA calculation, take the energy where this thing goes through the saddle point. If the planes are flat, if they're dead or something else, and then you just measure this. If the planes are flat, or Denver plane, there is another picture you have to take.
Okay, I think that was all.
Listen, the fact that this wave function not really relies on kappa, but they are somehow extended over as well. How will it be important in order to derive electron phonon coupling? For instance, usually one thing that T is just the nearest neighbor, so if I vary this distance, I have to change T. But this is not, this is much more complicated, because T is an effective parameter which does not depend just on the nearest neighbor, but also on the second nearest and so on. So it would be much more complicated to derive electron phonon coupling in this case. There would be a very strange structure.
That is correct.
If I vary the distance between the nearest neighbor sites, it's not that I'm just changing T, I also change T prime.
Sure. We've started quite a bit on analytical formulas for not these modes, but just the dimpling modes, which you would believe don't come, the buckling modes, and they change. You wouldn't believe they change anything, but they do change quite a bit.
You can also extend the argument to the doping situation, right? When you dope hole or electrons, you're not just changing the filling factor. Actually, you are changing the effective T here, which has not been carefully explored. When you dope, you actually change all the T's, right? Slowly. And in fact, in some situations, when you dope it, you totally change the physics. We are actually having the PIL probably coming out next week or so. We see a dramatic large effect on the T, just by doping the replaced resonant by new linear, the whole physics change. You go from ferromagnetic to antiferromagnetic just by doping it. So if you think of Jim Allen's, a lot of analysis, changing the factor is not the whole picture here. Well, a lot of chemistry happens, right?
Just to clarify the language, that's not doping as we're talking about here, that's changing the chemistry of one of the atoms, which has the same valence.
Yeah, but in some sense,
I'm confused on what you're saying. I'd like to understand it. What has been done in this study, we've just studied the shape of the band. But as we said, with a low energy expansion, we know roughly where the Fermi level is. So we're talking about the band within, say, a vault or something like that around the middle. And there, these things are fixed. But we say we don't know about the other terms of damage only. I don't know what doping does. I don't know whether you phase separation or this or that. I'm just telling you what the shape of this, of what these T parameters are. We do not know where the Fermi level is. We do not know where, what doping does. We are not discussing that.
Yeah, but what you can also imagine that when you dope it, you're actually effectively also changing the happenings, right?
Because of what?
Because now you are introducing.
What is your doping?
If you partially in the material, if you start to replace some portion of your metal elements with something very similar, but with maybe one more electrons, one less electrons in the system, right? Like in your original picture, you have some whole doped system which you have a much larger DC, right? In your first transparency, Mm-hmm. You show that if you dope it with some special factor, somehow you raise DC by a lot.
But this doping is small.
Sorry, you're taking a chemical doping. If instead of taking, for instance, strontium, blah, 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 I put some, the lamp, I put some strontium somewhere,
yeah,
this is the doping you're taking.
Yeah, a little bit. Okay. But then, in fact, it's also changing the chemical picture.
Okay, so the chemical doping.
That is what this is about. Yes. So
yes.
This study
for this
how the band shape or the Hopping interval change for different chemical compositions.
Yeah, and we haven't yet.
If you introduce now strontium for the in the first, for instance, you are introducing doping, the center you are changing.
Eva has done that. So if you put strontium in instead of what was it?
Lanthanum. Who's this one you want to talk about? Lanthanum.
Right. Then the T becomes T prime is smaller.
Yeah, T prime becomes smaller.
T prime over T becomes prime one instead of prime.
So. First of all, we haven't reached the point, the end optimal, right? You haven't done these calculations.
These are calculations are for the stoichiometric
compound.
But
they
are self-doped.
We don't study.
You can also use a huge unit cell and try to reach the end optimal, right?
No, but listen. T is constant, as Eva said. T prime change, so it's completely non-trivial. Probably it depends on compounds. We all agree that different compounds could. It's true.
But not like doping long-term copper oxide would not change this much. I mean, if you do put strontium, a little bit of strontium.
It decreases, T prime decreases.
Yeah, if you put in strontium, T prime decreases a little bit. You know, these kind of effects we don't know enough about. That's why we do.
We didn't,
this
part, yeah, we didn't
we
want
have
to.
Whatever, 16 known. What we do is structurally known ICC compounds. We don't know what happens with doping or this and that.
So the idea that ultimate doping probably the effective T ratio T prime over T for lanthanum compounds is even smaller of what you are taking here.
Okay.
I should maybe say that Eva is willing, if anybody's interested to learn how to run these codes, she'll be willing to teach you.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And we had another